Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the charming, emerald, politically charged world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and joining me via can on a very, very, very long string is Ben. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
Hey, this week we're taking a look at Season 7, Episode 5, The Conspirators. This episode stars Clive Revel as an Irish writer and poet who is using a charity that provides relief to victims of the Northern Irish conflict to buy weapons for the IRA. Revel was born in New Zealand, but made his name as a Shakespearean actor in London. He's had a long and storied career in film, television, and video games as a voice actor, and he originated two of the most iconic roles in pop culture as the voice of Alfred in the first few episodes of Batman the Animated Series before it was taken over by Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. And he was the original voice of the Emperor in the theatrical version of Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back. The voice the person who appeared on screen, that was a female actor, and then the voice was dubbed in by Clive Revel. You can't really see that version anywhere unless you have an old VHS copy.
Yeah, VHS or otherwise. I think technically there was an old DVD release that had them on a second disc.
There is. That's the Laserdisc version. Not even up-res, just scanned in.
Oh, yeah. It's not even anamorphic widescreen. It was a big fuck you.
It's a bad version, yeah. And I normally would have wrote more, but honestly, nobody else in this episode was even slightly interesting when I looked into their IMDb. And
shots fired.
And I don't know how to tell you this, man, but I am tired this week.
No worries.
I feel like we should address it because it's definitely going to come through. This is the... starting a week ago... my partner and I, Jenny, friend of the show, have taken on a 2-year-old temporarily. We are taking care of the child, so this, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know what words are happening, but
it's okay.
I have went from never having a kid to having a 2-year-old kid, and it's been... an adjustment period, I think it's safe to say.
You went like 0 to 100.
We went straight. You know, it's like when you're starting a new video game for the first time, you just put it on like the hardest difficulty. That's kind of what
put
we're
it
doing.
On the hardest difficulty, and then you mash the button to skip through all the cinematics and tutorials.
Yeah, exactly. Just get me in there. And then basically the first enemy comes up and taps you on the forehead, and you're dead. So that's kind of what I'm working with. And consequently, I didn't really write a very long intro, and I haven't pulled any clips. But honestly, I have to say, not that much worth clipping in this episode. It's kind of for the last episode ever to be on NBC, the very last of the original run of Columbo. Yep. It's not a great episode.
It's funny because I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well.
Even though I feel like it's a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
But I think part of why I enjoyed it is sort of the fact that it was like the subject material. I mean, outside of was it Clive?
Clive Revel.
Clive. Yeah. And that he's genuinely fun to watch. Like, he's great. I mean, I think the cast generally is good in this one. Not that that's a surprise, because it's mostly him and Peter Falk. And like, that's great. Give me more of that.
He's doing a very great Irish accent. He's doing a Dublin accent. He's doing a great he's not doing even slightly a Northern Irish accent.
Right. He's nowhere close to Belfast.
No.
That's true.
Which is where he is purported to have grown up, he says at one point. Actually, at one point he says that he grew up on the streets of New York. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
What was that about?
All over the place. Man, I don't know. I guess it's supposed to be a suggestion that like he got the hell out of Ireland shortly after he got released from prison. Because when he was, you know, in his teens, he was, you know, part of the IRA and got busted with dynamite.
It's very unclear exactly what's supposed to be going on in the time frame of everything.
I know. It's all over the place. I mean, the subject material and kind of what they cover, I thought was interesting, especially given, you know, that it was 78. So
it was very like daring at the time. I mean, the IRA, I honestly now don't feel particularly comfortable talking about it because it's a very serious subject. And obviously, I don't think either of us are I don't know about
No.
I'm not super well informed on it and definitely would not feel comfortable speaking at length about it.
Well, because after this episode, I was like, I kind of want to read about this. And it's one of those things where it's like, I know enough to not put myself in the middle of it.
Right.
You know, so clearly neither one of us is an expert on any of this. We have very little context, but it is, I mean, the IRA, like that whole Northern Ireland conflict is about Northern Ireland still technically being part of the UK as opposed to being part of Ireland.
Right.
You know, and so that's like, that's the fundamental crux of that. Like there are other things about it, like the fact that, the part of Ireland that the UK was like, no, we'll keep this part. When we let Ireland go, is like the most industrialized, profitable part of Ireland for Britain. So there's a lot to unpack there. And while the whole thing is a mess, and I'm not going to make a judgment
absolutely.
That part of it. And, it's like, the colonialism may be bad.
You know, it's aside from the general breaking the law is bad. Tone of this, I wouldn't say that it necessarily. I wouldn't say it comes down too hard on either side.
No,
other than the general law and order nature of it. It has to come down because. So he is
because Columbo's anti-murder.
Joe
and
Devlin.
That's really the only thing that they kind of.
Well, also he's anti-smuggling as well.
Well, sure. Well, smuggling guns to people who
will
are going
commit
to
murder.
Use those guns to shoot people.
That's true.
I mean, that's still kind of in the set, but I know what you mean.
Also, but it's interesting. But by the way, this is not a case for Columbo. This is very clearly a case for the CIA or the ATF
like,
or somebody
CIA,
else.
ATF. FBI, there are so many departments that should have gotten involved in this
over the LAPD because he is way out of his class. We are talking about international terrorism at this point.
Right.
And so this is not Columbo's, this is not his particular, you know, bailiwick. This is not a rich person bumping off his wife to get control of the, you know, purse strings or whatever. This is serious
crime.
It's weird
that the CIA would be like, so a gun runner got murdered and it's related to smuggling guns out of our country and into Northern Ireland, ostensibly for conflict against one of our allies at the time. No, we'll just let this guy in his ratty ass Peugeot.
And they address it and the CIA says, "Well, Columbo, we'll kind of let you run with this." They just aren't, they're just not involved. They just at no point does anyone say, "Shouldn't we get someone who's maybe a little more experienced or in these matters in on this?"
Right. The closest thing to it is that he mentions that the FBI has like a file as long as your arm about the gunrunner that gets killed, or rather the middleman, Vincent Pauly. What a good name.
It's a great name. There's some really great characters. You know, so initially I was kind of hard on this one, and I think it's just because at a certain point in the episode, I was like, we're so near the end. And then I looked and there was a half an hour left in the episode. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's gets a point when you're like, I think we've about wrapped this one up, right? And then
you're
look and you're
he's got this already,
no,
right?
No, there's so much more left in the episode. It just really they want to stretch it out as long as possible.
Yeah, and, well, so like there's that whole sequence where after, you know, like basically the crux of it is that Revel is, you know, this author, this poet, he's this famous guy.
He's a raconteur. He's a musician. He's a, we see his show and he's doing like a sort of a stage play. He's acting out his arrest. He's singing, he's dancing. He's doing the whole goddamn thing.
Right. He ostensibly fundraise for, you know,
victims
of violence in Northern Ireland,
right.
But that money is actually going to buy guns for the IRA.
Probably the most co-conspirators in a single episode so far, right?
There's
like eight
people
involved in this.
I mean, that's why it's called The Conspirators.
That's right.
Yeah,
I suppose so. But obviously, he's the lead one.
Right. Well, and so that's the thing is like, so the whole crux of the thing is like, basically this middleman for, you know, for gun business.
Right.
Just strolls up to him at like a book signing.
Yeah.
You know, with a code phrase to, you know, in the book that he wants signed to indicate, and then tails him to his own house to like do right. the deal, like super unprofessional as far as these things go. And obviously he's pissed off by it, but like then yeah. also extorts like 50 grand out of him.
Well, he's basically he's a bad gun runner. Let's just say that. Like, he's doing a bad job of trying to like steal money from this guy.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is if you're gonna try to extort a guy, you know, you don't jack the price up by 50%. Start a little smaller and pocket it because
Is he extorting him? He's not extorting him.
Well, no. I mean,
what he's trying to do is he's trying to take the money, not deliver the guns, and then make a run for it.
I mean, he's trying to at least grift him for the extra 50K.
Right.
Like, at least. Which, you know, 78, that's a lot of money. But so when that, basically, when he goes to, like, finalize the deal with the dude, he murders him because he checked and found out that he was planning on, like, skipping town, like, 2 hours after he got the cash.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, like, obviously that deal has fallen through because... Devil doesn't have a connection to the actual supplier. And,
right.
And there is a long sequence of him trying to buy guns from alternate suppliers. Like there's so much extra stuff in this. And it's not bad. Well, I mean, the erotic art scene is real bad. And the miming that happens in the beginning of that scene is also terrible. That's the token.
I mean, the whole bookstore scene could have been cut. There's nothing added to it, really.
The only thing there is just that she casually mentions that, that Ourselves Alone or whatever, you know, it translates to Sinn Féin in, you know, in Gaelic.
But and literally anybody could do that. You have a cast which always includes some random cops. Which there's always an Irish cop in these Columbos. Like, just put John Finnegan in there, you know, just put, Bruno Kirby in there and have him go, oh, yeah, you know, I know what this means because I'm, you know, the Irish cop.
Right. I mean, I think about the same point when you were like, oh, God, I've still got half an hour of this. I thought this was going to be wrapped up. It was the same point where I wrote down somewhere in my notes, maybe it's not the smartest idea to be the guy who is actually meeting gun runners
right.
if you are a famous celebrity.
Yeah, why does like, he if your need face to be is the point, everywhere? Why does he need to be the point man on this? It's not really clear.
He's literally got a lackey who as mentioned, he could send out. Yeah.
In the title of this episode, there are multiple conspirators, any of which could do this completely competently. Right. They're all at least as competent as this Devlin guy, with the exception of the lackey who is, I mean, he's kind of
fine.
He's fine, but he's not, he seems like he's kind of a hapless nerd.
Right. They kind of paint him as like that he's a excitable sort of green, gopher.
I would say if we're talking accents, this guy has the worst accent in the episode. By far. This lackey character who was played.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's played by.
He's
played by Michael Horton. His name's Cary.
Cary Malone.
Cary Malone, yeah. But yeah, he has a very terrible, like almost leprechaun esque Lucky Charms kind of accent he's doing.
I mean, there certainly are worse ways to try and. Communicate that your character is Irish, but
there are many Irish, quote unquote Irish people in this episode, but only one actual Irish person in the episode, and that's the captain of the ship that they're going to run guns on, who actually is from Ireland. Everybody else,
go figure,
is putting on the accent.
Yeah, but I mean, outside of like the very obvious weird things of like, there's no way anybody would leave this case in Columbo's hands the moment that guy got murdered. Like the FBI would have been there already, and then very quickly, you know, someone else would have been involved. But like outside of that stuff, I did enjoy it, even as I thought, oh, this is a very long episode.
I just think there are too many parts where the episode is in love with itself that that really, like, the scenes where he's doing his act and the amount of, like, canned laughter that they pump in and, like, the amount of cutaway shots to people laughing and yucking it up, especially, like, there's that. There's also the limerick scene, which we haven't really talked about.
Well, that's actually, I mean, as much as I'm sure you hate the limericks, that's a scene that I really enjoyed because it was a scene of Columbo and Revel, like, palling around Joe Devlin, you know, but, like, that scene of them in the pub is actually, like, that whole thing, and then that they migrate over to another pub and are still drinking and all that is actually a really enjoyable scene because it's still, you know, it's their performances. It's the two of them.
I love Columbo's performance in this. I love Clive Revel's Joe Devlin in this.
Yeah,
I just wish they were doing something that wasn't super irritating. You know what I mean? Well, if they were just having a conversation or, like, quoting lines of poetry at each other, it's specifically that they're doing bad limericks.
That it's a limerick battle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like they do the, like, Columbo does the pelican whose beak can hold more than his bellican, which is an Ogden Nash poem. It's just a thing I know, apparently.
Yep, that's a part of your brain.
And it's not funny, but everyone, it's fine. It's kind of clever the way everything by Ogden Nash is anyway. That's a separate conversation. But it's not like, I don't think Ogden Nash thinks it's as funny as the people in the pub do when Columbo reads it out. They're all, like, buckled over, like, belly laughing as though he was doing, like, a Chris Rock routine in the 1990s. Like, he's just, they're going insane.
They're also drunk.
I suppose that's true.
I mean, so there's a little bit of that. But no, I understand. There are some of those weird choices. I mean, as far as when you mentioned, like, the episode being in love with itself, I immediately thought of the, four or five times that we watch Columbo roll around on the floor with the, you know, taped, you know, corpse frame in the hotel room, where it's like, why do we keep coming back to this? Outside of that, why, when he is there, like, what the fuck is Devlin doing just strolling into that room? Like, it's a crime scene, my dude. I understand you maybe wanted to, like, you know, check for everything, but also, like, you should have done that after you shot him with a silenced pistol.
Sure.
And took all of his documents, like, not returned to it after that.
Yeah, why, when he comes into the hotel and meets Columbo, why is he there? I don't know that I mean, ever...
He's literally there to scope for more stuff that might lead him to who was actually supplying the guns.
I don't think they ever even pretend... have a good reason. Because usually, like, there's a good reason for the person to be there when they do the return of the scene of the crime thing.
Right. There's always some reason they have made up that is at least, it is at least better than, you know what, we're just not even going to talk about it. And that was definitely how this episode rolled more than once with Devlin. It was in this fashion of, like, oh, nobody's going to address the fact that he just fucking showed up to this place that is suspiciously connected to everything else. Yeah, it's like, obviously, Columbo, you know, is suspicious.
Columbo later finds him at the boat, which is, I guess we haven't really talked about the plot of this episode. So maybe a quick rundown is, I mean, we have a little bit sort of here and there, but we're kind of talking around it.
I mean, we talked a little bit about, you know, how he basically catches the middleman at trying to make off with the money and murders him. Devlin is kind of working with his co-conspirators to try and figure out who was supplying the guns and try, because the plan was those guns would get loaded on a ship and the ship sails on the 15th and they would have to be on before that because that heads to Belfast and then
what helps to England IRA. And then to Belfast
it goes through the port in England that like is the pass through, like the customs port, basically on the way to Belfast. And so then the rest of it is him trying to chase down the supplier or a new supply of guns, while Columbo is obviously trying to chase him down and figure out who killed, you know, a dude who has a file as long as your arm at the FBI for selling guns.
And I think this might be the most telegraphed catch as far as what, like, as far as what it actually, like, the clue is that he uses to find him out. Because it's such a weird, specific thing that this guy does. So when he has these bottles of whiskey, he always drinks the exact same brand of whiskey. Which mm-hmm. did you write it down? I didn't write it down.
Oh, I mean, I kind of did because there's a thing,
it's
full something whiskey. Yeah. And at the bottom it says, you know, let each man
be paid in full. But he does this thing where he takes his ring. He has a diamond ring and he takes it and he scratches the bottle and he says, this far and no farther. And he does that just to, like, say, I'm going to drink this much, and I'm not going to drink anymore. That's how we'll know that when we're done.
Right, and then later Columbo kind of ties that into, you know, rhetoric about Northern Ireland and some other stuff. But yeah, but that's the thing. And he does it so often.
Yes, and it's such a specific move that is specific to this guy. It's not something I've ever seen anyone do or ever heard of anyone doing. So it's so...
I've heard of people marking bottles, but not in the, like, I'm only going to drink this much, just in the, like, this is where I left it. And so if somebody drinks out of it, I'll know. That's the only way I've seen it. But his sort of, also, why didn't he take the bottle?
I don't know.
Why didn't he take it with his diamond?
Why didn't he take his book with his name?
Yeah, that was a big fuck up.
That's the huge, I mean, he gets mad at himself for not doing that. He apparently took all of the papers that this guy had. He forgot to take the book with him.
Well, yeah. I mean, Columbo said he had the book in his, like, coat pocket. And it's like, first of all, that's a huge book.
He definitely didn't.
Yeah. How would you miss that? Second of all, how would you not check him for anything like that? Or at the very least, take his wallet like you were robbing him. I don't know.
You've got plenty of time. You used a silenced pistol to kill him, which in the movies means it made no sound.
Thwip, which nobody hears. And it's not like the maid is showing up in the middle of the night to the guy's hotel room.
Yeah. Anyway, he's just stupid. But that's it.
It's clear. I mean, he even clearly is frustrated over the fact that he, like, got hot-headed about the fact that, you know, the guy was trying to rip him off.
Yeah.
And, like, you can tell that he really is like, I done fucked up.
Right. And that, but, so at the very end, Columbo basically figures out that this scratch is on all of his bottles. Like, he goes to all the various bars that this guy drinks at, collects all the bottles, and does some sort of forensic test, and they can tell that it's the exact same scratch.
Yeah, there's sort of a twofer, because there's the scratch thing for the actual murder, but there's also, because Columbo has, you know, basically put customs and everybody else on this boat, and they are combing through every piece of cargo that goes onto the boat.
But they can't find
it. To make sure
the
guns don't
go
on. And this is actually kind of a cool little moment, is because when Joe gets caught by Columbo, he seems pretty resigned to it. And not in a, like, I'm really upset. And then when he sees customs...
The Coast
chasing
Guard.
Down the boat.
Actual Coast Guard. I want to say this is probably the most expense ever in a Columbo, because they definitely
got the actual Coast Guard.
They got the Coast Guard. There's, like, a giant ship involved in this. There are helicopter shots, several of them. This is, like, there's some real production went into this one. I mean, they thought...
Yeah, they kind of blew out, I guess.
They thought it was the last one, to be fair, so they kind of went all out on that one. It's probably why this one was pushed to the end.
Longer.
You know, who knows how they were filmed, but that's probably why this one was the final.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But when the Coast Guard is running that down, that's when he's visibly upset. And that's kind of the second sort of catch thing, is that Columbo talks about how he noticed on the tugboat the flag of the O'Connells?
Yes.
Who are basically his co-conspirators. He noticed that flag and went, that's how it's going to happen. they're going to load the cargo on from the tugboat right before it hits international waters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, which is neat, you know, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I like a lot of this episode, and it's kind of a cool concept, but yeah, some of it is a little belabored. And also, again, there is that part of like, dude, if you scrape every bottle with your diamond ring, why would you leave that in the room?
Right. Well, he's doing a fun poetic joke, according to Columbo, a little private poetic joke.
Yep.
Which is what ends up getting him caught. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the basic of the plot. I don't know what else you want.
I don't know. I want to talk about RV selling Gunrunner and his RV stuffed to the brim with guns.
Oh my God, that was amazing.
It's amazing. So
I loved that. He's like, you're sitting on it. Ugh.
He goes to Joe Devlin goes to this this car lot, and he meets this like cow, basically a cowboy. Basically, oh, yeah.
A caricature of an RV. Yeah, it's Jensen, yeah. RV Seals.
Yes. This guy who's great, who's like, hey, man, I'll put you in an RV today. Come on in. I'll give you a show. He's like, he's trying to get him to come into this RV to show him.
Right. To basically be like, hey, you know, you really should check out the inside of this RV. I leave it unlocked and open on the lot, but it's full of guns, dude.
But later he comes over to the radio station and brings his RV with him, and he's like, come on in, I'll show you, and just starts opening drawers, and each one it has like 20 guns in it, like every drawer has guns. Opens the stove, the stove is filled with guns.
I know. Everything is just jam-packed with these packages of guns, and it's so funny because like, at first he's like, well, I got the money, I got paid, and even though my middleman's gone, like, I'm still going to deliver, so, you know, if you want them, you got them. And he's like, well, where, and he just goes, you're sitting on them. And it's like, okay. And so sure enough, in the, like, storage bench that the Devlin's sitting on, there are all these, like, packages that, let's be honest, they look like they are books.
Yes.
Wrapped and taped up. And then when he opens up one, then it miraculously has the like Mac 11 that's in it, you know, the little, right. And then he proceeds to start, doing the show and tell of like, check out all these places where I stuffed these guns. Isn't this cool? No one will ever notice this in this RV.
Right.
The moment that they open any cabinet at all.
Yeah. What happens when other people on this lot like are showing the RV to someone? Are they just like, oh, don't, not that one. That one. No.
Right.
That one's sold.
That's already sold. You can't look at that. You can't look at the Apollo model. Yeah.
It's a fun, silly scene that really broke up. Like, because my attention was really flagging, and then that just, like, brought it back in. And I think,
right, because you're like, this is so ridiculous.
I think that's the point when I checked. I think that's around point when I was like, okay, so we're nearly done, and that's when there was about a half hour left in the episode.
Right. You're like, well, we got the guns back, so now we gotta, like, it's gonna end soon. Of course, it has to.
But, but no, it doesn't.
Surprise. Nope. Yeah. There's more drinking. There's more talking.
Yeah. Also, as I'm jumping into your segment a little bit, segment again. But this might be the, as far as suspects go, this guy rivals Columbo in rumpledness. Like, he's always slightly askew. There are a couple scenes where his tie is like coming out the side of his neck. Like, he's just, I don't know. I guess because he's meant to be kind of a drinky guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's meant to be drinky. He's meant to be an Irish poet. Like, there are all these sort of like stereotype things that they are leaning into. But I mean, yeah, he wears a lot of corduroy and a lot of tweeds, and like the tie he wears most often is like a really, really chunky knitted style that is kind of like a diamond knit. I really like it, apart from the fact that it is like 70s big.
Oh yeah.
But like, yeah, like, I mean, the first thing I wrote down was like, cause the initial scene you see is him, in a corduroy jacket playing a banjo.
Right.
You know, this episode just opens up with, hey, what's up? It's going to be a lot. Buckle up.
Yeah.
You know,
get ready.
And yeah. And it's like, and it's good. Like the, you know, it's a good looking blazer and all of that. And it actually is part of a suit, unlike his his buddy, I wrote it down and I always forget, but Carrie Malone has like there's a salt and pepper, like, tweed suit that he's got that I love. And then there's a point where he comes in off his motorcycle and he's wearing a Harrington jacket, which is like that classic kind of like funnel neck, like zip up jacket that has, like a tartan plaid on the interior. Like it's iconic. And it's iconic because of like Steve McQueen and guys like that. But, you know, it's a good jacket. And, there's a bunch of really great stuff. I mean, Devlin has a lot of good outfits, and, you know, a lot of them are corduroy and tweed and that kind of stuff. And then I laugh because, like, one of those scenes that I was talking about where he is trying to find other gunrunners to sell him shit, and, like, he's in a warehouse, and he walks up to a forklift as a guy walks up to it from the opposite side to basically ask for guns, and the dude's like, I got M16s. And he's like, no, those are too big. And he's like, well, that's what I got. I'm just telling you what I got. And he's like a real dick about it. Like, you know, basically where it's like, I'm surprised they didn't just punch each other. But when he turns away and walks away, I made a note because I was like, wow, that ass is popping right out. Because he's like center vent on his suit. And and clearly, you know, the jacket's buttoned. But like when he turns around, it's just like that center vent is popped completely out, and his booty is just way too big for that. It's great. Like, it's one of those moments where you're like, oh, wow, yeah, he's
keep an eye out for this butt, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It's a good butt, man. Like, but yeah, I mean, it's like, and so there was shit like that where I saw that, and I was like, all right, that's kind of great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know what else I took note of.
This episode, this was going, I just wanted kind of a little behind the scenes, as I mentioned before, this episode was the last one that would be produced for NBC television.
Right.
The last one in the 1970s.
Right. And then there's a big gap of, is it almost a decade?
It is. I can tell you exactly how long it is. So this one was released in, this one aired May 13th, 1978, and the next episode aired February 6th, 1989, so over a decade.
Wow.
That's what we're going to jump into. We're going from the NBC thing over to the
CBS?
No, ABC. ABC mystery movie. And so it's going to get weird next time we get together. It's going to be a little bit of a jarring shift, I would say.
Okay.
It'll be interesting at the very least.
You've told me that many times.
Yes.
And I know that I won't be able to make sense of it until I watch this next episode.
The next one is actually not that bad. The next one, as far as like Columbo Mysteries, is pretty standard. It's pretty Columbo-y as far as like the plot and the mystery. It's when we get into the ones after that, in that same season, where it's a little weirder. Like there's one set on a movie studio. There's one that involves call-in radio show that I don't want to get into too much, but it starts getting weird.
That's all right. I mean, yeah, I guess we'll find out.
We'll find out. So that's going to do it for this week, or this time. I keep saying week. We're bi-monthly.
This time,
we come out twice. Every 2 weeks. Next time we'll be taking a look at Columbo Goes to the Guillotine. We got another evil magician, as if there were any other kind.
How many of those have we gone through already?
Just the one.
Is it just one? I thought we had at least two episodes with magicians in them.
There may have been another one with a magician,
but as a murderer.
We've only had the Jack Cassidy murder magician so far. The Nazi magician.
Right. Oh boy, indeed.
So that's gonna do it for this week. This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah.
This far and no farther.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.